Blog Talk Radio.
Appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services, by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll is previously the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Medical Center and the Bay Pines VA Hospital. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults, in other words, in the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. If you're having any problems breaking through to that next level in athletics, or you have any problems at all, give her a call at area code 813-689-2466. Her offices are located at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Well, guys, it was a great week last week. I did get a chance to have another talk with Mr. Thurman, who was traveling to California today, but he will be with us for the full hour next week. So we're looking forward to that.
Was he traveling to California for tonight's HBO card?
I believe so. Yes, he is.
Yeah. I kind of assumed that maybe.
Yeah, and he's in the company of Mr. Dan Birmingham and Mr. Edner Cherry. And I was told that they are going to have an announcement very shortly on a fight that Keith will be doing and Edner will be the undercard. So hopefully they'll get that word while they're out there with their mentor.
That's a wonderful move. It's good to see Edner getting back in the ring.
Yeah, the poor guy's been out of the ring since October of last year.
Yeah.
He's yeah, he takes it in stride like everything else. The man's been through so much in his young life that would kill a man my age. He had a wife who had open heart surgery, a baby who had open heart surgery. He himself was attacked by a pit bull. He had to fight his last, not his last management, the prior management. Was tied up for 2 years in court on that. And, I got some information on another court case. We're happy to see him back and ready to go. I did have a chance to talk to an authority in the Philadelphia area, and he tells me that Ray Robinson is going to have a meeting with the Pennsylvania boxing commissioner this week with Dave Tiberi, and they're going to try and iron out some things that Ray may be going with 50 Cent.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I didn't.
Yep. I had heard a couple weeks ago from Dave that he wasn't happy that the new Ray Robinson wanted to make a change, and they were trying to do everything they could to keep him in their stable, of course. But I guess he's had some offers, and now it's come to a point where they have a meeting with the commissioner this Wednesday. And as soon as I get an answer to that, I'll update everybody.
And the Tiberius, they've done wonderful things in this local area for boxing, and they've sort of put Delaware on the map. But
yes,
it seems like Ray has grown to a point to where he needs to advance a little further in his career and get some bigger fights, some bigger, you know, better televised fights.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems that maybe a change may be due.
Right. Well, you know, that's the same thing that's happened now with Stephen Cunningham has now left Kathy Duva and has gone to he's gone to Al Haymon also in hopes to make more money. I mean, he needs it with a sick baby that had to get a new heart. I mean, that's $250,000 right off the top of your head.
You know, I think what you have to look at, too, is you have to look at these fighters just from the perspective of being an employer, you know, at a company. And they've worked for this company for a number of years, but there's this company right across the street that's going to pay them more. You can't fault them for going across the street and taking the same job and making a little bit more money. And that's what's kind of happening. And, you know, and a guy like Dave Tiberi, who has proven to be a solid regional promoter, is just not going to have the resources to take a Ray Robinson as far as a Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. And again, even Kathy Duva in Main Event, who is a very large promotional company, their resources can't compare to Al Haymon's and what Al Haymon's doing. So, you know, the fighters are making decisions that empower them and feed their family for the future. So you really can't blame them. At the same time, you feel for these, you know, the Dave Tiberis of the world because it's hard to grow a bigger stable when they're constantly kind of being outbidded, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had talked to Russell Peltz, and I asked him, you know, how did Al Haymon end up with all these eggs in his basket? He explained to me that he went up and sold a deal to two hedge funds, and he got $400 million cash. And he went to all the networks and said, hey, you don't have to pay me a cent. In fact, I'll pay you. And he tied everybody up.
But you know what? Even before he went to the networks, he already he was growing his stable. In fact, the question was, why does Al Heyman have that? You know, why does he have like 50 fighters? Why does he now have 70 fighters? And then when he got the network deal, you could see all his plans have. You know, we weren't privy to his plans. None of the public was.
Yeah.
But once he got the network deal, everything fell into place. You know, for years people were saying, how come Lamont Peterson's not fighting Danny Garcia? The moment he gets the network deal, he makes that fight. So it was like, you know, with this guy, is, you know, he was planning this years in advance, and he was slowly amassing a huge number of boxers to put himself in this position, and to put boxers in this position as well.
Sure, yeah. We have a Mr. Golovkin came with his 20th straight knockout, huh? This last week?
No, that's tonight.
Oh, that's tonight?
Yeah, that's tonight. He fights Willie Monroe, Boxino middleweight champion, against Golovkin, uncrowned middleweight champion, really. So.
Yeah, I misread that. So after his 20th knockout,
And Willie Monroe is a southpaw. He's defensively aware, sort of slick, not really a lot of punching power. And you know, we got a good look at him on the Boxino championship. And he had moments where he looked good, and he also had moments where he looked a little averse to contact. So tonight, I mean, he has certain tools that may trouble Golovkin, but I'm not sure if Willie Monroe's that level of fighter to actually keep Golovkin off of him.
Mm-hmm. I think for some fans, what makes this fight interesting, again, is the stylistic matchup. And it will be interesting to see Golovkin try to corner and trap Willie Monroe. And you know, what's been said a lot over the course of the week is, you know, obviously people still referencing the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight. Well, the thing about, you know, that made that fight to some predictable is that Pacquiao's not a natural stalker. He doesn't know how to cut off the ring, hence the Chris Algieri fight. This Golovkin is a guy who knows how to cut off the ring. So it'll be interesting to see him do it against a guy who is really looking to move. Daniel Gill's a mover. Martin Murray will move to about the ring. But they're not movers like this guy. So it'll be interesting to see if Golovkin can cut off the ring, you know, on Willie Monroe with the same effectiveness he's done it on everyone else. Willie Monroe, we're going to learn a lot about his durability. If he's, you know, he's proven to be pretty durable so far. But, you know, it's going to take a lot more than movement to keep Golovkin off of him. So it's going to be, you know, it's an uphill battle for Willie Monroe. He's a significant underdog for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other question I want to ask you about, what did you think about the Pauly Malignaggi drop back?
Well, he got a severe cut in training, so he had to pull out that fight. I think I was curious to see what Malignaggi still has left at this point in his career. He's definitely started to excel as a commentator. You know, he's been a little Pacquiao adverse in his commentary, but he's definitely excelling as a commentator. And, you know, he himself questioned whether he was going to fight after that Porter debacle. So, you know, he's ready to get back in the ring, and, of course, he gets close and he suffers a severe cut. So you can only wait and see what he's going to do.
And Pauly Malignaggi, I don't think at any time in his career would he have beaten Sean Porter. So, I think that's not a good gauge as far as his retirement. Now, I've seen some things in that fight to where he slowed down. It looked like he slowed down a bit. But his fight before that, if I'm correct, was Zab Judah. And he absolutely outclassed and outworked and just outfought Zab Judah. He had Zab Judah in the middle of the ring with his guard up for most of the fight. So, I mean, Paulie, we have to see what level of competition he's going. And I hope that he's going a little bit softer touch than anything near Sean Porter.
Yeah, he was fighting Paul Smith. He was fighting the, you know, middle of the road kind of guy. So.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, but that's what Paulie needs. Paulie, I mean, it's interesting to see what he has left because I think he has more left than maybe he even thinks. I mean, you take a guy on like Sean Porter, stuff's going to happen.
You know what's funny? I always thought the Sean Porter fight, it made Malignaggi look a little worse than what he was at the point. It made Porter look a little better than what he was.
Exactly.
After, because, you know, Malignaggi's not a guy you steamroll. He's a guy who's proven to be, you know, you can get him out of there on his feet. He's proven to be quite durable. And,
yeah,
you know, Porter came in and steamrolled him. And everybody was like, man, Porter's a killer, and Malignaggi's shot. And I don't think it was that. I think it was a, you know, style matchup. Again, Malignaggi's fought his whole career practically at 140. He moved up to 147,
exactly,
you know, after he turned 30. And Porter's a guy who fought in the amateurs at 160. So,
yeah,
you know, he's just a big, strong guy. And Malignaggi, even in his prime, just wouldn't have had the firepower to keep a guy like Porter off of him. And then you're going to move Malignaggi up to welterweight at 130, and Porter's going to move down from 150. It's just, it's not a solid matchup, and I think it made Porter look a little sweeter and Malignaggi look a little bit more sour than what they actually are.
And those are my sentiments exactly. And not to discredit Sean Porter. I mean, he's a heck of a fighter. But at the same time, I mean, Paulie doesn't hit with any power, to be honest. And Sean Porter, he's going to run into things, but most of the time he's going to run through things. And he has deceptively good feet. He has fast feet, and sometimes they get a little hectic forwardly moving. But, I mean, he has quick enough feet to where Paulie, I mean, is not going to dance away from him. Paulie's not going to be able to get to do anything, really. He's not going to stop his momentum, and he's not going to get away from him. So I totally agree with you, Todd. It was a style matchup, and it was the heavier man. After they rehydrated, it didn't even look fair. It didn't even look fair in the ring.
Which is why, you know, Al Haymon has made the fight between Sean Porter and Adrian Broner. That fight's not at 147. That fight's at a catch weight of 145 with a rehydration clause of 155. So, you know, I guess Adrian Broner said, wait a minute, my fight with Paulie was a little tougher than your fight. All right, let's do this a little differently. So his team definitely demanded that rehydration clause. So you don't kind of, again, styles make fights. You know what I mean? Think about this. When Sean Porter was coming to the ring to defend his title against Kell Brook, most people weren't giving Kell Brook a chance. All of a sudden, after Kell Brook fought him, you realize that, you know what, a boxer poised, calm, and big enough to handle Sean Porter's forward movement, who's poised and calm enough to take advantage of the openings, can beat him. You know, he's not unbeatable. And I think it brought a lot of people back to reality. Maybe even Malignaggi. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. And that's going to be an interesting fight between Broner and Porter. Just because the weight does make a difference. I was leaning heavily toward Porter before I found out about the 155 rehydration clause. So, I mean, that's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how Broner steers Porter, because that's what he's going to have to do. Broner can't back straight up. He's going to have to move in circles.
Yeah. At 155 pound rehydration clause is huge, because the fact of the matter is if it comes down to, you know, a complete equal fight, you know, if all things being equal, if you give both guys, if you gave them all, you know, equalities in speed, size, power, and everything, I think when it comes down to it, Broner is a cleaner boxer than Sean Porter. He has cleaner, tighter technique. And with that said, period, that always gives you an avenue to win. If you are the guy who has a cleaner, tighter technique, you got a chance to outbox the other guy. And then by having a fight at 145, making Sean Porter, who fought at 154, bull down to 155 and not allowed to rehydrate past 155, what Adrian Broner has done is he's effectively made it a much more even fight. And, you know, it's the fight we'll predict the closer it comes, but it's a very interesting fight, very interesting fight.
Yeah, it comes down basically to cleaner boxing against higher work rate. Because Sean Porter,
you know what?
I'm pretty sure he's going to be 155, and he's going to have that energy there.
Yeah. And you know what? The thing is Porter is not going to get Adrian Broner out of there. And for all Adrian Broner's flaws, even inside and outside the ring, one of his weaknesses is not a lack of toughness. He's a tough kid. And Marcos Medina, you know, was threatening to run him over and run him out the ring in the first round. And the kid hung tough and fought back and actually had Marcos Medina in trouble at different points in the fight. So I think Porter mm-hmm. probably takes a better single shot than Medina, but he has nowhere near Medina's power. So it would be a very interesting fight, very interesting fight.
And I don't think Porter has Medina's boxing IQ. I think Porter, he's a very athletic guy. He's a strong guy. And he's smart in the ring, but I don't think he's that Medina has basically that experience. And I think he went, he changed trainer. Where is that, Garcia?
Yes, he has Garcia.
Yeah, he's with Garcia. And I think he did that at a good time in his career where he was still learnable, coachable, teachable. So, and Garcia, he's done good things with Madonna's boxing. That's why he gave Floyd a lot of trouble, because Madonna has deceptively
a better jab
than Porter.
Yeah. He has a better jab than Porter. You know what else, too?
He's a better inside fighter.
I find Madonna, when he attacks, to me, he's a little less open to the head than Porter is.
Yeah, because he can't rely on that athleticism.
Exactly.
And Porter, he's a fast guy. He's going to get to Broner, but it's all about how and how long.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we're joined by the inimitable Dr. Chris.
There he is.
How you doing, guys?
Hey.
How's it going, Dr. Chris? How's it
going, champ? I'm not sure. Murphy's Law is following me around this week. You know? Whatever can go wrong will go wrong. What the hell's happened to me this week? So I heard you guys talking about Broner.
Yes.
Is he fighting Porter?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
But they're fighting at a catch weight of 145 and a rehydration weight of no higher than 155. So he's definitely mm-hmm. trying to boil Porter down and keep him at a pretty fair weight for himself.
Mm-hmm. Broner looked decent in his last fight. He looked pretty good. And Porter looked like he improved a little bit, too. That'd be interesting. And who fights tonight?
Your buddy, Golovkin.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I got to call Skinner. I'll call him in Arizona. He calls me every – he really likes him. How can you not?
Golovkin's fighting a southpaw kind of slick guy who moves a lot.
Yeah, Willie Monroe's son, isn't it? Willie the Worm's
son?
Yeah,
Willie Monroe, yeah.
Yeah, I saw him fight Hagler. I saw him in the gym many times. They had Boogaloo Watts. Philly had some good middleweights around that time. And I think Briscoe was even around then, you know, just coming up. So that would be interesting, but I think Golovkin's too rough for him.
It'd be a lot more interesting if it was his father fighting instead of him.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, he was slick. He was slick. He was close to 6 foot, but that was big in those days. Now every middleweight's 6 foot now, you know? So nothing new now. Christ, every middleweight today is a light heavyweight, really, of yesteryear. These guys are monsters.
Yeah.
You know?
On that card, Dr. Chris, on the undercard, if you're not familiar with some of the lighter weight fighters, they have Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez, who's considered one of the top 3 or 4 fighters in the world, and he's a seek-and-destroy fighter like Gonzalez. You know, he's only fighting at 112, 108. He's, you know, small guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, if you like an action fighter who does it with technique, like after tonight, it would be very interesting next week to get your take on Roman Gonzalez and hear what you think of him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The small fighters haven't been on lately.
Yeah,
you know?
HBO was finally bringing it back tonight for mm-hmm. American audiences. So.
Mm-hmm.
I used to like the Darchinian, and I liked the other guy too. Was he a Filipino?
Oh, Donaire.
I like Donaire. He had one bad fight, and it seems like it affected him mentally or something.
Exactly.
I think that Nick Walters fight might have did a bit more damage.
Yeah, another good fighter, yeah.
But you're right, though. It seemed like the Rigondeaux fight took confidence away from Donaire. And he never was the same fighter.
No, he just, you know. And that happens. Whatever happened to him? Did he ever fight
anymore?
He's
been defending his title. What happened is HBO's not putting him on TV. He's no longer with Bob Arum. So he just hasn't been on the
He left Arum? He didn't like getting robbed?
and the thing is, it's a complaint in his pocket all the time. Yeah, it's
That's
a complaint about Riggin' the Al style. I understand the public may have bloodlust to a certain extent, but there's nothing better than pure boxing in there. A pure
It's great because I'm not going to say there's nothing better, but that's what I like. I do understand some people like the Arturo Gatti types. What I don't like, what I really think does boxing in general a huge disservice, is when you're watching HBO and you're listening to a Jim Lampley talk, and he calls a fighter like Riggin' the Al boring, or he calls a fighter like Floyd Mayweather boring, or they even call the Floyd Mayweather-Pacquiao fight dull. That may be the case, too, but we're supposed to be the informed viewers. We're supposed to know what we're watching. We're supposed to be able to appreciate the art of boxing. And I think they do a huge disservice when they talk about Riggin' the Al dull. What they need to be saying is, this guy's so good, he's making other competitors afraid to attack him, and thus his fights aren't entertaining to the general public. But if you're entertained by skill, watch Riggin' the Al. Watch Arislan de Lara.
Very good. I like to watch him.
But what
the moves that he makes, then you understand. Everybody used to fool around in the gym and try to do what Willie Pep could do, and they'd fall down, fall in their face. I mean, and then you realize this guy's just agile. And there's no way that Graziano's ever going to look like Willie Pep in the ring,
So, that's the problem. Dr. Chris, when we all step into the ring, we're all taught to hit and not get hit, right? But some of us are better at it than others. And so what happens is some people develop different types of styles. And so a guy like Arturo Gatti is not a better fighter than Guillermo Riggin' the Al. He's more exciting because of his flaws. And what the networks don't do a good job doing is telling the public that when you're watching these exciting fighters, part of the reason why they're so exciting is because they're hittable. You know what I mean? And
You can't have a slugger every night. I mean, you just aren't that many around. Way back was a guy called Billy Graham. He couldn't break an egg. But what a boxer he was! He gave everybody a difficult time. But nobody really wanted to watch him. And if you remember, one of the great light heavyweights of all time was Harold Johnson. He'd put you to sleep.
Yeah.
He would go 15 rounds and not get hit by a jab. I'm going, what the hell? Nobody can touch this guy. And they would boo him and all that. I just liked the guy. I thought he was great. I'd like to go 15 rounds and not get hit in the face once.
I think if a crowd
wouldn't make me mad.
If a paying crowd is not satisfied with the way a guy fights, I think it's their prerogative to do. But I think those that work in the boxing industry, who make money commentating off of boxing, then I think their job should be to propagate all styles of boxing and not only fan-friendly styles of boxing. Instead of them, I think what the average commentator does in a sport is they try to make the average person understand their sport. They don't turn the average person off from a certain type of – could you imagine watching – the Super Bowl, and it's a defensive struggle, and the commentators are like, "Oh, the Patriots in the Seattle, it's such a boring game. It's 3-3 in the third quarter. This is boring." That's what they do with boxing. That's what the
football commentator.
Yeah, it works. It disservices the sport we love. It really does. It's a tremendous disservice.
I have a big problem with the commentators anyway, just because they don't call the actual fight fair when they're talking about it. Two guys are throwing punches. One guy throws a combination, it gets blocked. They say, he hits them with a combination. The other guy lands clean, they don't say a word. They don't say a word.
Yeah.
I watched, especially during the Peter Quill and Andy Lee fight. During that fight, Andy Lee was landing very good shots, and it seemed like it took them almost all fight long to mention it. Like, the judges knew what they were saying. I respect that. But the commentators, they're feeding you bad information.
they'll tell you a guy is hitting you with a combination and they're actually blocking it, but then the guy actually gets hit and they don't say anything. They like try to sway the viewer, telling them what they're actually saying. And no, you're not going to trick my eyes with your words.
You know what I do? I love Sugar Ray Leonard. Grew up being a huge Sugar Ray Leonard fan, but Sugar Ray Leonard's commentary in that particular Peter Quill and Andy Lee fight was the worst and most one-sided I ever heard. Andy Lee catches Peter Quillen with a nice shot in the 12th round. And Sugar Ray Leonard says, "Man, I'm impressed with Peter Quillen. His ability to take a shot in 12 rounds. Says nothing about the punch thrown. He's impressed with Peter." Instead of saying, "You know what, he needs to get out the way and I get hit with that shot," he's like, "Man, I'm impressed. He's fought for 12 rounds and he's still taking shots." Well, that's what you train for. That's what you're supposed to. So, yeah, counterproductive to the growth of the sport a lot of times.
And I
think that's the problem. It's counterproductive to the growth of the sport.
Sugar Ray's a terrible, what would you say, publicity person, on fights. I mean, he just doesn't understand what the hell's going on.
He was a great fighter and all that, but he's not
with it. As great a welterweight as he was, he doesn't, terrible commentator. Now, oddly enough, Paulie Malignaggi, he brings a light side to the game because he was a he appreciates boxing and so forth. I'm going to tell you, though, the Philadelphia crowd, when you go to local fights, they appreciate good boxing. I noticed that when I go there. So really, the Philly people are really, because there's so many fighters in Philly that were slick. And they love slick fighters in Philly, And, of course, they didn't, Benny Briscoe was popular, but he was a slugger. But you're seeing a guy tonight, Willie Monroe was slick. He was a slick fighter. And Boogaloo Watts was a slick fighter.
Howard
Johnson was a slick fighter. All those guys. And then they had way back. They had some great lightweights, too.
You got another one coming back in, Chris. Hank Lundy's coming back to fight the end of the month.
I like watching Hank Lundy. Favorite people to watch let fight, Hank Lundy. Just one of my favorite people to watch fight.
Yeah.
You like watching Hank Lundy because anything can happen, and anything probably will. Just because he's going to give you good boxing in spots, he's going to give you good defense in spots. He's going to give you power hitting in spots. But the whole thing is, those spots work on both ends. So he's going to do it himself, and it's going to get done to him.
You know who's a terrible guy to watch? He's awful. God,
he's old.
Almighty.
Only doesn't hold on the inside.
He's been, hold. A left jab or a right hand and hold. The left jab, right hand and hold. I mean, he's just an awful guy to watch. He's not going to be able to sell hot dogs in New York, that guy, He won't draw flies in New York when he fights. He didn't sell out the Garden.
You know who he's fighting next, Dr. Chris, right?
No.
He's scheduled, it looks like, close to be assigned as Tyson Fury. That's supposedly the next fight.
Tyson Fury? Crazy. Tyson Fury and Amber Gore get in the ring.
Tyson Fury's already said he fights like a shit house or something.
Wow.
Not Tyson Fury.
Tyson Fury will make him mad.
If Tyson Fury's the kind of guy you're just not going to hold.
he's crazy anyway.
Big aggressive guy, yeah.
Wow.
Chris, we just had a caller call in. He wanted to know if you ever got the motor started, and I said we had talked about it, and you said no. He said, "Well, there goes his right hook, and he'll mess up his left."
I figured
hook
it out. It was bad gas. The old gas looked like diesel fuel. And then I'm not a great mechanic, but I noticed when gas looks like diesel fuel, or brown tea, then it's not right. So I put fresh gas in there. One pull went right off. And then, like I said, then the intake didn't work, so I had no success down there. It was Ronnie. So
am
I got
on
started.
Here? Am I on here? Am I on the show?
Yeah, you are.
Here we go.
I got to go. I just heard a Chris a parable. One pull and it's over. I mean, I've heard one push and it was over, but I never heard one pull and it was over.
One pull, a Honda. One Honda's a one pull.
Yeah,
one pull with the new gas went right off.
I hear you go up with one pull.
That's why I buy Hondas. That's why I buy Hondas. Don't buy anything made in China.
I'm down in Delaware having some good Italian food, so I'm going to go. But let the one shot wonder continue.
They shut the Elks Club down when you're not there. When you're not in Florida, shut it down. Only you and your other buddy, and you only got two guys that go there, for Christ's sake. That means plenty of prune juice left over down there.
All right, I gotta go.
I'll see you. Hey, Ron, right. Take it easy.
Yeah. All right, ciao.
Have a safe trip back.
Look at this ugly creek. It's just tons of mud. Man. Oh, boy. We had a good dinner, Frank, up here. Man, was it delicious. Seafood up here is good.
Yeah.
Was good.
Yeah.
It was good. I had a king crab leg the size of, honest to God, the biggest king crab leg I ever had in my life. 2 inches across. 2.5 inches across. Delicious. The guy, he's opened a new restaurant. Iacona. Yeah,
Jimmy's place.
Yeah, what a great, and the new place he opened.
Yeah.
When I ate with Ronnie. Ronnie came up.
Yeah.
It was great. So. Yeah. Yeah, it was good. We had good seafood down in Ocean City, Maryland, too. We only spent 2 days there. My buddy had to come home, but it was cold. It was 60, and the wind was blowing off the ocean. We were freezing. Damn, I mean, it was nasty. So, what's going to happen tonight, guys? Who do you pick?
Poor Willie. Poor Willie.
You should see two stoppages. I think you'll see a more competitive fight and a later stoppage in the first fight with Roman Gonzalez. I'm predicting him to beat Sosa by probably a later round stoppage. And I think Golovkin's going to anywhere from, the moment he figures Willie out tonight. Yeah, I don't know how durable Willie Monroe is. So it really, there's a lot to say. But, I think that's going to be a early to mid-round stoppage. But I think you're going to see two stoppage victories tonight and two pretty action-packed fights too.
I predict Roman Gonzalez stoppage also. But with Golovkin Willie, it's going to be interesting just because Willie, I've seen him fight a physically imposing guy in a boxing tournament, and he didn't look that good. He won the fight because the guy wasn't clean at all. But Willie didn't look that good. To be honest, he looked a bit shell-shocked without being bombed on. And he looked skittish. And you can't do that against Golovkin. You have to have a bit of calmness. Because if you go in there skittish and like that, then you're essentially Matthew Macklin. You're going to get hit in the body and you're going to quit. Or you're going to be stopped. So I don't know if Willie, the style matchup's good on the outside for their abilities. It depends on the man inside, to be honest, and we have to see about that.
Well, you know what that left hook he's got when he's fighting a left hander, that's where he's going to be throwing that hook. He's going to be upsetting the pace of the fight because he's going to be slamming Monroe in the side. You know, he's going to keep his foot outside and keep banging. I don't see Monroe holding up to that. Monroe would be okay, but this guy happens to be maybe the best body puncher, one of the best body punchers I've ever seen. So
Monroe also is a guy who doesn't have a lot of power. You know, he's 20 fights and 6 knockouts. And, again, some guys some guys are very good. And you know, I don't know if Golovkin's great. We don't know that because he hasn't fought another very good fighter. But he's at least very good. And Willie Monroe is good. And good typically doesn't mean very good. You know what I mean? So if Willie Monroe goes ahead and beats Golovkin, then I think we've learned a lot more about Golovkin, and we certainly learned a lot more about Willie Monroe. But again, as good as Golovkin is, he can only punch with two hands.
And it depends how Willie moves. He can get caught with the left hook, but it also depends how he moves, because he can get out the way of it.
No matter how good a guy is, he still can only punch you with two hands. So you have just as much opportunity as he does. So anything, that's why it's a fight. Anything can happen. I don't expect it to happen. I expect one thing to happen, but again, first of all, kudos to Willie for stepping up and taking the fight.
Yeah. You know what I'm thinking? I'm sitting here laughing. I'm like, what will Tyson Fury do? What will his plan be? That's going to be some show.
You know what I think?
We know he's going to talk.
Well, yeah. Right now, though, I think in the ring, first of all, I hope it's a big ring, but I think in the ring, I see Tyson Fury trying to keep Klitschko at range with his jab, because that's how he fights nowadays. But Tyson Fury is not afraid to mix it up. He's not afraid to fight on the inside. He can fight on the inside. He's a very capable inside fighter, specifically compared to Klitschko. But he doesn't have Klitschko's experience or athleticism or tighter technique or power, for that matter. So.
Klitschko's going to have a hard time holding.
That's going to be a fun fight, though. That's going to be a fun fight.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be amusing. You don't know what the hell is going to happen. If Klitschko tries to clinch him, he's going to roughhouse. He might get headbutted. He better watch it. They're about the same height. Somebody's going to get a skull right between the eyes if they keep fooling around there clinching. He gets away with it because the smaller guys, he leans on and he keeps his head up. He doesn't get headbutted. But against Tyson Fury, he better watch it.
He might have to watch Tyson Fury leaning on him. Tyson Fury's 6'9", and he's taller than Klitschko, and he's learned how to use his girth too. And this fight is happening at probably the best time for Tyson Fury in his career. He's at the best point. He's still very young. He obviously, being 27 at heavyweight, he still can get better. But this is a good time for him to take this fight and see if he can cross over to that next level. Again, even if he doesn't, just like a Bryant Jennings is a better fighter for having fought and lost to Klitschko a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tyler, May 29th, we've got Amir Khan going against Chris Algieri. What's your thoughts on that one?
I don't give Algieri a chance.
Really?
I don't give him a chance. I don't give him any chance at all. He's going to get bounced around, punched, out-jabbed. He'll even get out-jabbed.
It's going to look a lot like the Pacquiao Algieri fight to me.
Wasn't that something? How many times did a little guy knock Algieri down? And you know what happens with Algieri? When he goes down, it looks like a bus hit him. He leaves the floor.
He
rolls
down
across
bad.
The floor, rolls over, does it. I mean, he looks like he got hit by a bulldozer or something.
I never saw
a guy. You hit him and he leaves the floor. Both feet go boom. He rolls over. What the hell is he? Acrobat. He's an acrobat. he wants to tell everybody how good he can jump up after somebody knocks him on his butt.
The reason why Algieri obviously when he reaches a certain level he's not competitive, but Algieri, the reason why he's a top 10-ish fighter at 140 is because he's particularly long and he's fast with his feet. He moves about fast and he does a keep away.
Yeah, he got good feet.
Well, he's fighting at 147, where he shouldn't have been fighting, where he fought Pacquiao, and he shouldn't have been fighting Pacquiao at 147. So he's not a natural 147. Khan is much more naturally built into that size at this point in time. And the one advantage that Algieri has over everybody, range and just foot speed, that's where Khan is exceptionally strong at. Khan is very rangy, and he's very fast of foot. Algieri has nothing to hurt Amir Khan with, which is the one thing you need if you want to fight Amir Khan. I don't see any way Algieri is not only does he not win the fight, I don't see him being competitive in it at all.
I don't either.
Yeah,
I don't,
yeah, absolutely.
The things that allow him to not get hurt in a fight, like the things that allow him to, at the very least, minimize damage in a fight, Amir Khan has and does better. So,
Amir Khan respects power and effective aggression basically coming to him inside. And Algieri does none of that. Not at all. He's not a powerful guy. He's real flighty. He doesn't even plant with half of his punches. And he's not. He's just. He's not going to outwork Amir Khan. That's not going to happen. And as I said, I don't see. I don't even see how Algieri got this fight. He's not that credible to me.
Algieri got this fight because Amir Khan wants the September fight with Mayweather. So this is why Algieri gets this fight, because Algieri is. You know, why? Because Algieri at this point, specifically because of his win over Provitnikov, he's a credible name, right? And he's not necessarily a credible name on your resume, but he's a common name. The Pacquiao fight made him a common name. So Amir Khan fights him and has very little risk of losing, because to beat Amir Khan, you typically have to really stay on him or you have to knock him out. Algieri's not going to do either.
And
in fact, this is a fight where Algieri, to me, you know, Jerry's tough enough to not get stopped, but he's going to take a beating. I really see that.
Yeah. And Amir Khan will come forward. I mean, Amir Khan confident, he will come forward.
The problem with Amir Khan is he usually gets knocked out coming forward. When he gets hurt, it's because he's letting his hands go. He lets his hands go, you know. And his hands are significantly faster than Algieri's.
Yeah.
Remember Amir Khan, too.
Remember Amir Khan and Paulie Malignaggi fight?
Yeah. There you go. That's the example ever.
That's essentially who he's fighting, a guy who can move around, has no power. I'm sure he's rangier, but he's not even faster than Malignaggi was.
No, and he's not as good as Malignaggi. He's fighting a poor man, Malignaggi. He's not as good as Malignaggi was.
No,
he is
very poor man.
Yeah.
Broke man's Malignaggi.
I don't think it's a great fight. I think it's a smart fight for Algeria to take, because you know what?
Financially,
big fights, in Amir Khan, you got to take that fight.
Hey, where else would Algeria make that kind of money? You know what I mean? He's got to take it. You got to take it. You're not going to, you know, you got to take that fight. Can't blame him, but, you know, I don't like to hunt lion with a BB gun. You know what I mean? I don't.
With that said, if Algieri somehow upset the apple, I mean, that would be a humiliating loss.
He's going to say, who's that smart-ass Panarella? Said I got a BB gun in my ass. That bum. I go out and shoot a crow with that BB gun and cook it for him. He'll eat that crow. Who knows? I might give him a little incentive. I hope he's listening now. I'll fix those guys. Oh, Christ. So, there's a lot of good shows coming up. It's a good time for boxing, you know?
Yes, sir.
Good time.
Oh, yeah. Not for James Kirkland.
Wasn't that awful? Wasn't that awful?
It was awful.
He got
James
smacked
Kirkland
around. Boom, boom. Mm. If that dummy doesn't go back to that woman, Christ, what the hell? He's got to be. When I heard him, when you guys said he wants to get technical, about what? You know?
Jesus
Christ.
That's exactly what he said last week.
I bet that woman was licking her. She was licking her chops on the sideline. Yeah, man, go ahead. Get in there now. See, I told you, I can hear her. I don't want to listen to that dude to get technical. That's like saying you're going to make Tony Galento technical. You know what I mean? It just doesn't work. You know?
Work.
Jesus, God.
Any other fighter but him. Any other fighter but him.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Z, what do you think
heavy
about
that? Heavy, hard puncher, and he just got... He got you know what? When you get a slugger and you try to make... He freezes up. He loses everything when you do that, you know? Nothing moves right. He's trying to be technical and watch this, watch that. You just got to let it go. Let them punches go and hope one of them lands. You can't get in there and be technical. Dumbest damn thing I ever heard. Oh, well.
And you can see him in there at moments thinking, like you could see him like thinking and almost a little robotic. But then he when he started really getting hit, he started reverting back to the old him, but he couldn't do it because of his training. So,
but you know what else too, and I got to give Canelo some credit because I think Kirkland hangs around longer with Ann Wolf, but I think you just see a more extended same fight you would have seen because I think the thing about Canelo Alvarez, he's extremely poised at 24 years old, and he's become a very violent counterpuncher, kind of like a Marquez counterpuncher, where when he decides to open up and counterpunches in combinations, and he really ended the fight, not with the knockdown, because I've seen Kirkland get up from knockdowns and go ahead and do what he does, but he hit Kirkland to the body, and essentially, from that point on, Kirkland was punching with his arms. And that's the thing. When you attack a counterpuncher, and as vicious as Kirkland is, even with Ann Wolf, he's attacking recklessly. You're always Canelo would have even with Ann Wolf would have always had those openings, and was always going to catch him with a straight right. He was always going to come back with the left hook to the body. That was actually I thought that was a very bad style matchup for Kirkland because that is to me. That is what Canelo thrives against, someone who walks into his wheelhouse and gives him those openings. Canelo doesn't like when you make him think. You know what I mean? Canelo doesn't want to overthink out there, but when you make it a fight, a boxing match fight, Canelo can do that all day long. He conserved his energy, so he didn't he didn't punch himself out, and he was just calm in the pocket. He got hit with a couple shots, but he stayed calm under his defense. And when the openings presented himself, pop, 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 pop. Next thing you know, the fight's almost over.
And what Canelo will do, Canelo, he's not going to fight all round long. He'll sit there and he'll explode. Now, when he explodes, he throws hard combinations and he throws almost everything into him. So after exploding a while, he'll take his break. He'll cover up. He might go on the ropes and everything. And the only thing that made it interesting, a little interesting, is when Canelo, he exploded, hit Kirkland pretty good, started out that way. And then Canelo, he took his break, he went to the ropes, and Kirkland attacked. Canelo, when Canelo tried to hold Kirkland, he wasn't playing the holding game.
Yeah, he doesn't do that.
He fought his way out of the hold. Well, from that moment on, Canelo was like, I can't hold, but I can hit. So basically, I mean, Kirkland, you can't come at Canelo. You can't be straightforward line to him because that's going to hurt. Before that fight, I watched Canelo and Shane Mosley. Shane Mosley is a tough guy. He is a tough guy. He was taking those shots that Kirkland was getting hit with, but he kept coming. He kept fighting. He was locked at times, but Shane kept coming. And that's the problem. You can't come forward like that when you fight Canelo. You have to either make him commit himself, fight from range if you have it, or you have to create angles to a certain extent. But you're not just going to steamroll Canelo. That won't happen. He's a strong guy.
Not at 154. So not at 154.
Not at 154. He's a strong guy who will stand his ground.
Yeah.
And the strong guy who will stand his ground and fight in the pocket.
And you know what? The other thing, too, is James Kirkland was throwing a lot of punches. He was letting them go like he does. But what Canelo was doing was digging in and sitting down on his punches. And there was a difference in the force coming off in each other's punches. I mean, Canelo was punching significantly harder than Kirkland.
He was throwing everything into the combinations. And he would go to the body, to the head. He would go to the head, Kirkland a high guard. He would rip two to the body. He made Kirkland back up a few times to the body.
Yeah, it was a good fight, though. It was enjoyable, you know.
That fight wasn't
going to last long. It wasn't going to last long, but it was enjoyable while it went on. I liked the fight. I enjoyed it. Canelo is starting to impress me a little bit.
Yeah.
A little more impressive. Yeah, he's getting a little. He started to get a little more impressive. You know, he's been around a while. He's had some good fights. He's starting to look better.
And he's still only 24 years old. I guess that's the thing you forget. He fought Mayweather when he was 22. So I mean, and this guy may never be a great like a Julio Cesar Chavez, Marquez, or Morales, or Barrera. But Canelo is one who, at the very least, is very good, and he constantly puts himself in with fighters that contest him too. He constantly challenges himself. So,
and he's showing more maturity each fight. He's showing more maturity and less weaknesses. Now, he's still very hittable at times, but that's usually when he's not throwing. When he's throwing, you're not going to – I mean, it's hard to even counter him because he throws educated punches, and he's pretty quick. And you don't want to take the chance of just opening yourself up when he's opened up.
You know what, I think Canelo actually, too, I think as he gets older, I think eventually he grows a little bit more into 160 and moves at 160. I think he's actually going to have better conditioning at 160, just primarily because I think, you know, he's a very, you know, his musculature, you know, is very compact. And he's not a kind of guy who can lose. For him getting down to 154, I'm guaranteeing he's losing a little bit of muscle, too. And I think it's affecting his conditioning. He's not built for the marathon. So I think at 160, he's going to have a little bit better conditioning, which is why he said if he's not fighting for a title for right now, he's fighting at 155. I honestly think he has to lose a little muscle at this point in his career to maintain 154.
Yeah, and he's getting older, so he's going to be 160. He's going to eventually hit 160. He's 24 now, around maybe 27, 28. He's going to probably hit around 160. That's going to be interesting.
I just think his conditioning, like I think you'll see better stamina at 160 just because he won't have to lose as much off his musculature, honestly.
You know, those last 4 or 5 pounds make you so much stronger. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, when you're fighting at 53, 54, then you jump, you're just perfect for him. You know, you're so much stronger. Five pounds ring weight is 15 pounds street weight. You know what I mean?
It's just
much stronger.
Yeah.
And he will hit a little harder. So I think and you know what? He's going to be a very wealthy young man if he takes care of his money. I hope he does because, you know, I hope he doesn't do what Chavez did, the father. I was disappointed when I heard all about the father doing all that stupid stuff with. I didn't know all that went on. They, you know, they kind of showed you that when the son was fighting. You know, just dumb. But that's what happens.
Speaking of the son, the son's looking very wealthy.
Go ahead.
Who?
Sugar Ray Leonard.
Chavez Jr. is looking to take a fight. He's looking to take a fight in July, Dr. Chris.
Who?
Couple.
Chavez Jr.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. He was talking about maybe Matthew Macklin or Lucien Boutte.
Mm. Neither one I see him beating. Not with his current attitude toward boxing. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be honest, I mean he's disrespectful to the sport.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I guess even with the call out, Matthew Macklin's 160, Lucien Boutte's fighting at 175. So are you saying, you know, if I feel like getting in shape, I'll fight Macklin. If not, I'll fight Boutte. You know what I mean?
And that is in and of itself is like a slap in the face. I mean, you're in it, and now he's his own person, so he can do what he does, you know, with freedom. But I just feel, in my personal opinion, to be in a sport like boxing and to act entitled. He acts like he's royalty junior, and that turns me off to a point. If he works, you can see he has it in him. He has the skill. He's the toughness, but his attitude toward boxing really, really sucks. So, I mean and that's disrespectful to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I like watching the kid fight because the kid comes to fight no matter how unprepared he is.
I mean, he comes to be tough. He comes tough.
Yeah,
fighting, he won't fight all fight long because his conditioning sucks, his attitude sucks. So he can't fight all fight long. He's going to be tough all fight long. Even when he got knocked down his last fight, it was because he was flat-footed on his heels, basically. I mean, he got right back up and won the round. It's just he quit on the stool. Why? Because of conditioning. He could barely breathe.
That's the truth. He wasn't in good shape. He was overweight. And then he realized how tough it is to fight light heavies. You know? That extra 7, 8, 10 pounds, that's a lot of weight. And plus, that guy's a big guy anyway. you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's 6 foot
Talking
three.
Bone.
Yeah. So he's 6 foot three. You know, that's a lot of size there. He knew he bit off more than he could chew. It took him about 3 rounds. Then he realized, where's the exit door? You know? Look around for the exit door. Keep it open. And I'm going to be out of here in about 3 rounds. You know? So, well, I still like the kid, though. I like him. I like to watch him fight. Like you say, he does fight, you know? So we'll see. Oop, 7 o'clock,
guys,
Frank.
Yes, sir. We're up against our clock. And, Chris, I want to thank
clock.
You for coming
up. We're
up
against
Appreciate
the
everything
clock.
You do.
Next week, we'll talk about Golovkin. We'll see what they got.
Talk about. Yep.
Triple G. That's what my buddy calls him, Triple G.
Triple G.
Not a good nickname. Got to give him another nickname. We'll figure we'll come up with something, you know?
Yep.
Well, all right, guys. Look, I'll see you. I'm going to feed this body. It's shrinking. All right, guys. Take it easy.
You take it easy, Dr. Chris.
Yeah. I guess Ty must have been on his cell phone. We lost him. I want to thank you for a great show. Next week we're going to have our good friend, Keith Thurman.
Keith Thurman.
Yes, and he'll also be joined in the latter part of the program with Mr. Edner Cherry, and they'll be able to give us more information and updates on their next opponents and when. It's supposed to be sometime in June, but they haven't named the opponents yet. So, ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week. In grateful appreciation to men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, a simple handshake, acknowledgement that you know they're there, really goes a long way with each and every guy and girl in uniform. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Culkep, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Kendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Chrisman, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogel, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, and Patrolman Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. At that time, until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields. The sun shines lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night.
Shema Shema Sona shene vorat fet hakuig gen ma ilma Shema lek ma ilma Shema leza ilma Sona shene vorat fet hakuig gen ma ilma Grief and pain are all I know.
1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999. End of shift. Last call. 6/13/11. May God rest his soul.
Love you and we miss you.